It's time! Hey, Dave, listen up, please!
Scotty, that's a great question. I got a question for you, though, Scotty. You know that there's other players on our team besides Desi.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know. Something amazing.
Jones for three. And he banks it in.
Bailey. Up and in and a chance for three.
Welcome into the basketball podcast of Mid-America. Seth Campbell joined, as always, by Scotty Bordelon. The season is over. The Hogs, with a fantastic Elite Eight run, losing to the national champion Baylor Bears. We'll get into some of that, wrap up the season, put a nice little bow on what has become a really successful 2020-2021 season. And got a lot of Hog fans, piqued a lot of Hog fans' interest. We'll also talk a little bit about the transfer portal. Eric Musselman today has picked up another transfer, so we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then, as always, at the end of the season, it's always good to go back and reflect on a few things that you said before the season, Scotty. And one of those was preseason awards that we gave out. And then we even went into the middle of the season and gave out midseason awards. So we're going to see how all of those awards shook out. And if we would give them to somebody else here on the basketball podcast of Mid-America. But let's start with today's biggest news, and that is the fact that Arkansas has picked up a new graduate transfer, just a new transfer in Chris Likes, Scotty.
Yeah, he's 5'7", but you've got to, when you're looking at Chris Likes, like, you've got to go deeper than the kid's height. You've got to. He's dynamic. He's played, you know, really well for a couple of seasons in the ACC. I think he was battling an ankle injury this past season. I think he only played just a few games, but Eric Musselman said he's got the ability to score, get his teammates involved, and they like how he gets into the paint. Even at 5'7", he gets to the free throw line. This is not going to be the first time I'll have covered a 5'7" guard. You know, when my first job out of college, I was covering Fort Smith Northside, and Northside's best player on a team that had a sophomore Isaiah Joe on it was Tevin Brewer. Mm-hmm. And Tevin Brewer was lights out, funnest player I've probably ever covered. He was 5'7", and he was a problem. And so Chris Likes, you have to look past just his size, man, because I think he plays a lot bigger than that. And he's proven that he can play in the ACC. So now you add Chris Likes and another guy from the ACC and Odisi Toney. Arkansas's roster for next season is looking pretty good. Looking pretty good, and it could get better.
It could get better. I think that Musselman will probably go to the transfer portal at least one more time. If you think about the team that he had last year, and he brought in three guys, and Vance Jackson, Jalen Tate, Justin Smith. And then you look at the guys that he's losing. He's going to lose all three of those, mm-hmm. plus probably Moses Moody. He's only bringing in two from a freshman class.
He lost Desi Sills, too.
And he lost Desi Sills in Emeka Obukwelu already.
Yeah, he's in the portal.
Which is in the portal, but he was just a walk-on. But you got to think he's going to bring in at least one more person for that depth, and we'll have to see. But
I would think it might be another one of those interchangeable positionless type guys, similar to, I don't know if it's exactly the same type of player that DC Toney is, but if they add another guy, he's going to be pretty interesting, and he's going to be an immediate impact, big time splash guy.
Do you think they need size?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, it's not that you got to go out and get another 6'10 guy or 6'11 guy, 6'9 guy. Like Eric Musselman, when you know, they landed DC Toney last week, he was like, those 6'5 to 6'7 guys, 6'6 to 6'8 guys, they're so valuable. Like, that's what you're kind of looking for, is versatility. And I mean, think about you put out a lineup with a bunch of positionless guys on the floor who can, you know, DC Toney can rebound. And I mean, you're going to be trying to replace the offensive rebounding and defensive rebounding that Justin Smith gave you, and just the steadiness that he provided all season. But Eric Musselman could floor some lineups next year that are next to impossible to defend, like just perimeter oriented guys that can beat you off the dribble, and might not be the tallest team, but just because you're a tall team doesn't necessarily give you an edge on the glass, I don't think. Like, rebounding's a want to thing. It's a you know, physicality thing, toughness thing. And, you know, a couple of the guys that, you know, DC Tony, tough. Like, I talked to a Pitt basketball writer last week to get some local insight on him, and Craig Meyer, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, he told me that DC Tony reminded him of some of the more important players during Pitt's most successful seasons of the program. And when that program was running, like, at full strength, they had dudes like 1 through 5 that were just tough as nails. And so that's exactly what you want to hear about a new guy that's coming in.
Yeah, that is what you want to hear. And going back just a little bit to the size thing, it doesn't necessarily mean that Arkansas is going to be short either. They have a 7'3" guy still on the roster. And some people were kind of upset.
And Jalen Williams.
And Jalen Williams, yeah. Some people were kind of upset with Connor Vandenberg's play towards the end of the year, but he still gave you quality minutes throughout the entire season. So I think that there's still something to be had there. He's going to have another year in the system, and hopefully this time he won't get sick too, right before the season starts. So there could be that. But then, as you said, there's also Jalen Williams, who sits at 6'10", and was really coming on towards the end of the season before he was diagnosed with a disease that, I don't know. Is that official? Can we say that, Scotty? What Jalen Williams had?
Yes, he had COVID.
Okay. So I was tiptoeing around it. I wasn't going to be the one. But yeah, so before he got COVID that were exposed. So that was a setback for sure, but he was really progressing. He was a key to them winning games, like against LSU. And so you're going to have both of those guys back. And you've been writing some season in reviews, look backs at some of the guys, and you haven't gotten through everybody on the team. But what have you learned looking back at some of the guys that you have looked at so far, Scotty?
Yeah, so I did Justin Smith on Monday, Devo on Tuesday, and I finished Jalen Tate today, which is Wednesday. I don't know that I'm going to publish it today because it would get swallowed up by the transfer news and whatnot. But one of the things that I found really interesting looking back at Devo's season, you know, we know he was dynamite in transition. Like, he had the ability to flip a game on its head in a flash. And the Colgate game was a perfect example. Arkansas is kind of stuck in the mud. All of a sudden, Devo gets the ball on the open floor, layup, like highlight reel type layup. I mean, Draft Express content put out a video. Devo's on draft analyst radars now, just because he exploded, played so well, and had some like really like one shining moment caliber plays.
Hey, he was on one shining moment.
Yeah, multiple times, like the dunk he had in transition against Tech, and then the center like snap to JD for a three. Devo could alter the complexion of a game just being himself.
Is Devo your starting point guard next year? With everybody that's on the roster right now that we know is going to be on the roster, is he your starting point guard next year, Scotty?
I don't think he's your starting point guard. Like, I think that's going to fall to, you know, either KK Robinson or Chris Likes. Like, that's going to be a battle in itself. But at the same time, I also don't think you bring in a player like Chris Likes and have him come off the bench. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I could totally be wrong, because I probably said the same thing about Vance Jackson. And then the Vance Jackson experiment didn't really work out. But I think Devo's at his best when, you know, he doesn't have all of the ball handling responsibilities. You know, he can just kind of, like I said earlier about what made him great as a freshman, like, he was just himself. And I think he's, you know, he's got some great point guard tendencies. Like, his vision's fantastic, and he can create a shot for just about anybody at any time. But I think you alleviate some of the playmaking responsibility from him and just kind of let him go get it. Like, I think he's going to fit in really nicely, you know, at like the two or the three spot. And he could probably play a lot of two next year if his catch and shoot ability grows and if he, you know, becomes much more consistent, you know, beyond the three-point line.
I thought it was really interesting, Scotty. You did the shot charts for Devo Davis, and he hit a lot of shots that I think would be high school threes.
Yeah.
So that's a shot that he's practiced for a while and for 4 years at least at the high school level. And I feel like the more he practices that college three, the more comfortable he's going to get, the more that he's going to be able to make that shot. I think he only made two threes all year long.
Yeah, and one of them was thrown in at the end of the shot clock against Southern from like 30 feet. So like I wrote, he only had like one standard three all season.
So I think that while his mid-range game is good, and that's not a bad thing, while some people might say that the mid-range game is dying, Devo and Jimmy Witt are trying to bring it back.
Jalen Tate too, man. Something else. Sorry, I keep cutting you off, but like something else that I found really interesting. Just I did Devo and Jalen Tate's season reviews back to back. So Devo's obviously is very left hand dominant because he's left handed, and Jalen Tate was, you know, Jalen Tate was great on the right side of the floor. So you've got a guy in the mid range who's going to give you problems left of the lane, and then Jalen Tate made about 47% of his two-point jumpers right of the lane. That balance that those two guys provided that Arkansas's offense last year was fantastic. So, I mean, you got Devo on the left, Jalen Tate on the right, Moses kind of all in the middle or just kind of everywhere in that mid-range area, and then Justin Smith was on in the lane, and Moses also owned the right corner where he shot like 63% for the season, which is just kind of mind-blowing. But the balance that all those guys provided Arkansas just where they were best at on the floor, that's what created great offense.
I agree. And I can't exactly remember what I was saying beforehand about Devo and his shot. I think that mm-hmm. the more he practices that shot, the more efficient he'll become from behind the three-point range. I think that the proof is there that when he practices the shot, that those shots tend to go in a game. So I think that those will directly correlate. All right, Scotty, let's talk a little bit. We mentioned Chris Likes. We really haven't talked about DC Tony.
Yeah.
I'm going to call him DC because that's what Eric Musselman called him, and that's easier for me to pronounce, but you can go with the official name. Let's talk a little bit more about the Pitt transfer.
Yeah, so like I said, he's going to provide you a lot of toughness, I think. And like Eric Musselman said, he's one of those positionless guys. He's 6'6", and, you know, he's – when I reached out to the Pittsburgh beat writer, you know, he said that he thinks that Tony is better served, you know, as kind of a complimentary piece on offense, where he's not like the – he doesn't have to be the star of the show. Like, he doesn't have to run things on offense. And that's probably where he's going to thrive. But I mean, offensively, this dude's got some real potential. Like, I looked this up on KenPom. His two highest scoring games the last two seasons have come against Duke. And I know Duke wasn't great last year, but they were the year before. As a sophomore, he scored 27 points against a Duke team that was ranked number two on KenPom at the time. And then this past season against Duke, he had 22 points and 11 rebounds. And then against Syracuse, 18 points, 5 rebounds. And then I think COVID got him. COVID got Pitt. And then their next game was against Syracuse again. He had 12 points and 14 boards. And then against Virginia as a sophomore, 13 points, 4 rebounds. As a freshman, 12 points, 7 rebounds. You score 13 points against Virginia, that's like scoring 20 against any other defense. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's right. And then he had, as a sophomore, 24 points against North Carolina State. And then as a junior and a freshman, he had 17 a game against them. So this dude, he's got some potential on offense. I don't think that he's a great three-point shooter, but Craig Meyer told me that he's not like infatuated with a three. And so he's not going to be I don't expect him to be like a high volume 3-point attempt guy, but really good off the dribble. And I think he's going to be a pretty good defender. Like Pitt wasn't a great team, but they were almost 5 points better than their opponent over 100 possessions when he was on the floor. So DC Toney's going to be, he's going to be pretty solid. Like I'm excited about him. I was trying to find something else that Craig Meyer told me. Yes. Sorry, I'm going to cuss here for a second. So if you got kids listening, you should probably turn the volume down. Craig Meyer said, I've only been on the beat a few years, but having watched some of these teams growing up, he reminded me of some of the more important players from Pitt's most successful years as a program. Tough-minded guys who were defensively excellent and who would lead you to believe they were 20 pounds heavier or 2 inches taller based on their ability to handle physicality and, for the lack of a better phrase, get shit done.
There you go.
I mean, are you not excited by that? Like,
I like somebody who's going to get it done.
I'm doing my best to be impartial, but I'm already falling for DC Toney.
Already falling for DC Toney. That's really good information, Sky. And I really appreciate and enjoy the series that you do talking to writers that have covered the guys that Arkansas has transferred in from last year with Vance and Justin and Jalen Tate to this year with DC Toney, and I'm sure that you'll be in the works for getting one.
I reached out to a Miami writer about Chris Likes on Tuesday, so we'll see if we get a response. But I think there's lots of reasons to be excited about Chris Likes too. Like I think going into last season, one of the question marks was like, where is your, like, who is going to be your playmaker? Who is going to be the guy when, you know, maybe you're in a tight game, who are you putting the ball in the hands of, and who can just go create a play from nothing, from scratch? And I think Chris Likes has the quickness, the explosiveness, and, you know, the wherewithal to you know, generate some pretty good offense for Arkansas.
I agree. Well, before we move on from all of the newcomers, we mentioned it that Arkansas has two people in the recruiting class for this upcoming year. That's Chance Moore, which is a 4-star guard, 6'5", out of Georgia. But we were mentioning earlier a little bit about size. Well, Arkansas is bringing in, I might butcher his name, pronunciation, but Aqual Mawin. Does that sound right, Scotty?
I think that's pretty close, yeah.
If I butchered his name, I'm sorry. But he's a 3-star, but he's 6'10". From Texas. So Arkansas is bringing those two guys in. So that way you also have, so you have 7'3" Connor Vanover. You're going to have a 6'10" Jalen Williams with two guys with experience. And then you're going to have a freshman on the team that has also got some size that you can hopefully bring in and give him a little bit of experience. I don't know how much playing time he'll get first year. I'm interested to see how Chance Moore fits into this offense as well.
Yeah, for sure. Like playing time is going to be a battle again because there's just dudes up and down the roster. Yeah. Think about where the roster was after Eric Musselman's first season and just the complete makeover that has taken place like in the last 2 years. Like not that your walk-ons in like 13, 14, 15 on your bench aren't valuable in terms of like practices and, you know, getting you prepared for games and stuff, but there are more dudes on the roster. And that makes you absolutely dangerous. And that's how you get back to playing meaningful basketball in March on a national stage consistently.
Yeah, I agree. And you're going to have guys that are going to be able to take you to those places like in Indianapolis. So I think that it'll be interesting to see where all these guys fit in. And as I said, there's probably going to be at least one more new name out there. And we didn't even mention the fact that, you know, KK Robinson really didn't get a whole lot of PT this year because he got hurt. So yep. He's going to have to figure out a place. He's basically a newcomer, although he did play some. But
yeah, pretty much. He's got to learn to defend without fouling. And you wonder, you know, I follow Dave Richardson, who's Arkansas' strength and conditioning coach for basketball. He tweeted some pictures of KK during the NCAA tournament run. And he always, I mean, KK looked big, like
nice.
5'10", 5'11", maybe 6 foot, but jacked. I mean, just arms that, you know, guys who are 6'5" and 6'6" would like to have. And he always hashtagged those tweets with Project 190, And so I think KK came in at like 175. So he gets up to 190 pounds. He's going to be a brick wall.
Yeah.
You just hope he can, you know, you just hope you, he can keep his quickness, you know, just coming off a foot injury.
Well, that's kind of a look at a little bit of the newcomers and what Aaron Musselman is bringing in and already has on the roster. I'm going to transition just a little bit now, Scotty. Speaking of KK, this is a good transition. I got to go to the Elite Eight game, which was a blast, and we saw KK make 8 straight three-pointers before the game on one leg.
On one leg.
Because his other leg was in a boot, and he just held it up in the air, and then on one leg he made 8 straight before the game. And you know that it's going to be – I mean, Razorback fans are crazy regardless. Like, just say something bad about Arkansas basketball or something on Twitter, and you'll see how crazy Razorback fans are. But before the game, like, after about 4 – people started cheering, and then it got louder after 5 and 6. Oh, yeah. And you're like, all right, this is going to be intense. Also, some insider information here. Now, Arkansas does the thing what a lot of college basketball programs do. After they're done warming up the first time, they'll have a guy run out to half court, and he'll run to the goal and dunk it, and everybody jumps up, right? Mm-hmm. Insider information here. Ethan Henderson has been that guy all year long. He missed the dunk.
Oh, wow.
At Indy. He missed it. So, I mean, that's probably why Arkansas lost.
That's Baylor crazy. Bad vibes from the jump, huh?
From the jump. I mean, that's what it's got to be. No, but seriously, it was a great time. We were 3 rows from the very top of Lucas Oil Stadium.
Hey, man, you were in the building, though.
I brought my binoculars, and it was like, it was amazing because I was like, I can actually see. Yeah. And then, you know, you make friends. They zip tied every single seat that wasn't a sold ticket. And then we were sitting up there with a bunch of people that had bought their tickets for like $10 they were from Indianapolis. But then the guy in front of me was a Hog fan. And so we got to talking, which was great. But you know, just like how men do about sports, we got to talking, and I don't even know that guy's name, but shout out.
Yeah, that's all right.
If you sat in the top row at Lucas Oil Stadium and saw like a 5'7" white kid cheering, that was me. So there you go. We do have an award to give away. Scotty, we need to mention our winner of the BPMA ESPN Tournament Challenge. It was Garrett Martin, I believe is his name. He reached out to us and made sure that we knew that he won. But he had 3 out of the 4 Final Four. He had Alabama instead of UCLA, but who really had UCLA?
Yeah.
But he picked Gonzaga and Baylor to win it all. His bracket was in the 99.8 percentile.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Garrett, we have a prize in the works for you. We are going to reach out to you, actually, and figure out your T-shirt size. If you were watching.
Because, I mean, if you're watching this right now, Seth's got one on. But these shirts, so got to give a couple shout-outs to Gary Thomas, who does the Hog Tunes account on Instagram and Twitter. I asked him, I think before the SEC tournament, if he might be able to come up with like a podcast graphic for us to possibly throw on a t-shirt. And I was just like, hey, it would be, you know, it'd be awesome to just have this before the NCAA tournament or during the tournament run, something like that, just to have the graphic done. Dude, we had the t-shirts in before the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I got to take mine to Indianapolis.
Like Gary got that graphic done, and he set such a high bar for himself because all of his cartoons are just like out of this world.
Excellent.
But he nailed my mustache, and then he just nailed every part of it. Mm-hmm. And then I couldn't get a few t-shirt shops up here to, you know, commit to trying to print the shirts. There's just a bunch of colors. Just a bunch of colors on the shirt. And a couple of shirts a couple of shops I took the design by were like, well, we really kind of do more minimalistic type t-shirts where it's just like a couple of colors. I got tired. I got impatient. Waiting. So I reached out to my dad, who's down in Camden, and he got Mr. Earl Walker at Graphic Sensations in Camden to hook us up with these t-shirts. And they're like dry fit, so they're like moisture wicking type shirts, and it fits like a glove. It's pretty awesome. I wear this shirt, like, not to sound kind of gross, but like multiple times a week when I'm just kind of lounging around the house. Like, it's light, lightweight.
It's awesome.
I couldn't be happier with how they turned out.
So shout out to Gary Thomas. Fantastic work. He can hook you up too, by the way. If you reach out to him, he's done a few things. If you look around the Twitterverse for some Arkansas media people, you can see that he's done some profile pictures for a few guys now.
Yeah, he did a caricature of me for my wife for Christmas a couple years ago. And I'm working on getting that framed. I mean, he just, the work that he does is awesome. And appreciate Mr. Earl down in Camden.
Yes, Mr. Earl.
For coming through really quick, like really quick. Like, I think my dad put the order in for the shirts on like a Wednesday. And then by the Tuesday of next week, shirts were in. And by the Sweet 16, I was wearing this shirt during the ORU game.
Very nice. Well, Garrett, you're going to be getting one of these shirts. We'll reach out to you via Twitter. That's where you reached out to us. So we'll reach out to you there and get your shirt size so that we can get you hooked up as well. Supporting the Whole Hog podcast and particularly the basketball podcast of Mid-America. All right, Scotty, were you satisfied with how the tournament ended? I mean, the UCLA-Gonzaga game, I would have been okay if they would have gone to six overtimes.
That thing for sure.
Back and forth, but the way that ended on that shot, that's one of the best basketball games I've ever seen. But then Baylor to just physically go out there and dominate Gonzaga the way they did, I was slightly surprised, but at the same time, Baylor looked the part of a national champion. When I saw them in person, when I saw them in the Final Four against Houston, and then again in the championship game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think I did a radio spot a couple of weeks ago, like before the Sweet 16, so before Arkansas played ORU, I'm like, if Arkansas can beat ORU, get to the Elite Eight, they're going to be matched up with Baylor. And, you know, there were some, like, you know, those stories always come out about the contenders, like anonymous coaches talk about the contenders and here's why they will win the title, here's why they won't.
Right.
And I read the Baylor one just because I thought Arkansas and Baylor were kind of on a collision course because I liked Arkansas's matchup in the Sweet 16 with ORU. And so one of the anonymous coaches was like, you know, ever since Baylor came back from their, you know, their COVID break, you know, it looked like they'd kind of lost their, you know, like their dog, I guess, especially on the defensive end. But once they got really rolling in the tournament, they were the most overwhelming team in the country, like hands down. Davion Mitchell was a problem. Like he's, you know, not only probably one of the better defensive players in the entire country, but he's probably the quickest with the ball in his hands trying to get to the rim that I watched all year. Like he was unguardable, and his short space explosion and burst is what got him by, you know, some really good defenders. And then, I mean, that's just one guy. And then Maceo Teague, with his ugly hit shot from three, like he was hitting those at a high clip. Then Adam Flagler and then Jared Butler, like a National Player of the Year candidate. And then Baylor's bigs were just, I don't know how to say one of them's name, but the other one, gosh, what was his name?
There was a Mo Thamba.
Flo Thamba. So he was really long and active. And then there was Mark Vidal. Mark Vidal's built like a freaking SEC tight end.
He's thick.
Yeah, he's huge. He's 6'5 and like 275 pounds. Literally the size of a good tight end in the SEC, in the NFL. Those guys, it almost seemed like they were defending with eight guys on the floor. I mean, they were just, their speed and their quickness and their strength was just, it was overwhelming. And then when they're knocking down shots from three and you're in an early double digit hole, like that's tough to come back from. And they just, I know Gonzaga, they beat some really good teams this year, but none of the caliber of Baylor at the end of the year. Like it was kind of crazy just to see Gonzaga get bullied a little bit.
It was, it took Timmy out of the game, Drew Timmy from Gonzaga. I think that the best comparison for me, Scotty, is watching Baylor play Arkansas, because I have watched every single game that Arkansas played all year long. So I knew their strengths. I knew their weaknesses, right? But Baylor looked the part when they looked the part like they were pre-COVID break.
Mm-hmm.
When you left a shooter open, he was making a shot.
Right.
That's the markings of an NCAA tournament champion. When you drove to the lane, you weren't getting easy layups. There was no easy layups. Even if you thought that you had a lane, somebody's arm was coming in to knock the ball away. I felt like they were just quicker than Arkansas in that Arkansas-Baylor game. Now, all of that said, Arkansas played Baylor the closest.
Yeah.
Arkansas, so out of the teams that were left, do you think Arkansas could have been a top four finisher?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, but like at the same time, like you mentioned Baylor's quickness, I feel like the only guy that Arkansas had that really matched up well with Baylor was Devo.
That's fair.
In terms of like quickness and length and athleticism, explosiveness, all those things. I mean, you watched that video that Draft Express content put out, like that 2-minute clip of Devo's highlights just from the tournament. I mean, I bet there's 6 or 7 from the Baylor game, and 2 or 3 of them are him keeping Davion Mitchell and Jared Butler in front of him, which is it's not easy. I don't know. I think Arkansas just had so much team toughness and so much fight and so many guys that just wouldn't go away. I don't know that every team has that, has like the drive to come back from, what was it, 18 down?
Yeah. It was almost 20.
To pull within 4 points a couple of times. And you know, a shot here or there goes down, that's a completely different game down the stretch, but it didn't happen.
So I've already prefaced this by saying Baylor was the best team in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
Sometimes, though, in the NCAA tournament, the best team doesn't win at all. This year, they did. But that doesn't always happen.
If Baylor hadn't had its COVID break, dude, they wouldn't have lost all year. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, they lost once in the Big 12 tournament, and then they lost.
They lost at Kansas in the regular season.
Yeah, we would probably be talking about them being undefeated, wouldn't we?
Yeah,
they were that good. Okay, if ifs and buts were candies and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. I get that. 9 points is what separated Arkansas from Baylor. It's the closest margin in the entire NCAA tournament. If JD Notte stays in the game, the way that he was playing, Scotty, this is just me. Now, things are going to go differently. I get it. But I also feel like JD Notte is worth 9 points in that game because he was feeling it that game.
How many minutes did he play in that game? I can't remember.
But he fouled out with 12 minutes left in the game. So.
Right. So he had, 14 or 15 points. And I was looking at Hoopland's just because I wanted to see how Arkansas's offense picked up when he was in the lineup. Arkansas's offense was scoring 1.3 points per possession when JD was in the game. Their defense was giving up like 1.25, but like last I checked, 1.31 is better. So you're outscoring.
Yeah.
The eventual national champion when JD Notte is on the floor, because that's the kind of instant offense, microwave type player that JD was. He got the bad end of a whistle or two, and then he maybe got a little bit reckless with that last foul. Like
playing with 4 fouls, you
come to a jump stop, hit a floater from the block. You know what I mean? Like, You don't have to take the ball to the rim against whatever big that Baylor had that took the charge, which it wasn't a charge.
No, but yeah.
Wasn't a charge whatsoever. But officials are, especially college officials, are notoriously bad at getting the block charge call right. So you have to take it out of their hands, pull up, jump stop off 2 feet, floater off the glass. And you're still in the game, and then the game might turn out differently.
Yeah, I think that it is an interesting case study to think about if Arkansas and JD Notte would have stayed out of foul trouble. I think if he stays out of foul, if he has 4 fouls, he probably doesn't play as good a defense too. Can't be up in the grill. Because JD, during the last half of the season, he played really good defense. Mm-hmm. He could get into the grill of some of the defenders, and maybe he doesn't do that as well. Do you agree with the decision to leave him in? I'll go ahead and say that 12 minutes left in the game, he picks up his fifth foul. But you, as Arkansas, you were struggling to stay point for point with them. And you had one guy that could be instant offense, basically, when he passes half court. I got to keep that guy in the game as long as possible. And I have to trust him, especially when we are in the Elite Eight. There's only three games possible left. So we've played 30 games up to this point in the season. I've got to trust my guy that he knows the best way. And yeah, he probably drew a block instead of a charge. But I got to trust my guy when he is out there that he is going to be and make the smartest plays. And I think that I'm all for it with Musselman. That was the best way that you were going to win that game is to keep JD Notte in the game. It just so happened that he fouled out.
Yeah. So check this out. I pulled up the Baylor game on Hooplins with JD on the floor. 1.31 points per possession over 26 possessions. Arkansas had an effective field goal percentage of 92.9%. So in those 26 possessions, they shot 91% inside the arc.
Wow.
And they hit 66.7% of their threes. I mean, they turned the ball over like 27% of those possessions. And so if you weren't turning the ball over, you were getting a bucket.
Wow.
And when JD came off the floor, the offense went down to 0.9 points per possession. And the defense basically stayed the same. Except when JD was off the floor, Baylor shot a little bit. They shot under 40% inside the arc, but they made 3 out of 4 threes that they took. So offense was really good. The defense remained bad when he was out there, but the offense was good enough to not only get you back in the game, but it was good enough to potentially win it if he could have stayed out there.
If ifs and buts were candies and nuts,
and we don't
man.
Know if he could have maintained that level he was scoring at, but his scoring ability got Arkansas back in it, and then in a tight game in March, like, anything can happen.
As you saw from a half-court buzzer beater from Jalen Suggs, anything can indeed happen. All right, Scotty, let's wrap up the podcast with this. Let's talk about our awards. So at the beginning of the year, if you've hung it with us throughout the entire basketball podcast in America, Scotty and I gave out awards. Then after two games, I believe, into the SEC tournament schedule, or not SEC tournament schedule, into SEC play, into conference play, the turn of the year happened, and Scotty and I went to another awards. I remember these specifically because that was when I was in quarantine because of COVID, Scotty, that we were doing the midseason awards. So then we're going to do some postseason awards here, but we're just going to look back and, you know, it's kind of fun to reflect things that we thought were going to happen before the season and things that actually did happen. So we'll start first with the MVP of the season. My preseason MVP was Justin Smith. My midseason MVP was Justin Smith. And then I will give my postseason MVP to Justin Smith. Nobody played better in the tournament, I thought, than Justin Smith. Jalen Tate, okay, yeah, maybe. He ended up being on the all-tournament team. But Smith was a catalyst to get them there. And the game that he had against Colgate was absolutely terrific. And then he was so critical in a spot that Arkansas just, you wouldn't think that a 6'6 guy would be critical in offensive rebounding. He would give Arkansas so many second chances and so many second chance points that he is my MVP. What do you, Scotty, before I give it over to you, you had JD Notte as your preseason MVP, and then midseason was Moses Moody. Who are you giving it to now?
Oh, I think it was Justin Smith, without a doubt. Like, he put Arkansas over the edge, or he just bumped them up to like real deal contender. Just because he was so consistent and steady, and he got like his offensive package grew as the season went on. Like, he went into the SEC tournament with a new shot that he hadn't pulled out. They hadn't pulled out before with that Antoine Jameson runner, and he hit it with, I mean, he hit it like with really good efficiency. Like, how do you guard that guy? And, you know, it's funny. Like, I wrote on Monday, because I did a shot chart. He was like 3 of 25 for the season on 2-point jumpers right of the lane. And he just kind of struggled overall for the season with that jumper. Yet you look up and he, I mean, the last couple months of the season, you can't really find a more efficient player.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was scoring off offensive rebounds. I think in the tournament, he scored 10 times immediately following an offensive rebound. I mean, those are points that you're going to have to replace next year. And those types of buckets are invaluable. And just the way he read balls off the rim and his timing and his touch. I mean, some of those weren't just, I can grab this missed shot with two hands and just kind of drop it in. I mean, he's having to read a ball off the rim, gauge the angle off the glass, and then tap it in with his right or his left hand. I mean, that's an amount of skill that I'll never understand.
Right.
And defensively, he was just such a great player. Like the Texas Tech game, they shot 3 of 17 from the floor against him when he was the nearest defender. And they were 1 of 13 inside the 3-point line. He's just top to bottom, just invaluable. And that's not even touching on his passing.
Yeah. He was a really good, him and Jalen Williams.
Justin had more potential assists. I think he had 78. He had more potential assists than the rest of the forwards on the roster combined.
Wow.
It's good stuff.
That's really good. And then you obviously saw how important he was to the team when he was out. Mm-hmm. So I think MVP pick, good pick all around for both of us with Justin Smith. All right, most improved. Preseason, I went Jalen Williams. The midseason, I went Jalen Williams as well. And looked like the right pick all the way up until NCAA tournament time. And when it mattered most, definitely the most improved player was Devo Davis. For Scotty, before I let Scotty go off, he said Vanover would be his most improved player, and then midseason said Devo. And I think that you were right, Scotty, about that at the midseason. I think Devontae Davis is by far Arkansas's most improved player.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you talked about Justin Smith kind of pushing Arkansas, you know, into national contention. But Devo just, his evolution and his growth into, you know, a guy that, you know, in the early stages of the season, about the only time he would get in is like the second half against Southern. And then you saw him kind of against Auburn, you saw what kind of a defender he could be. Like you saw then that he had like maniacal defensive potential, just the way that he tracked ball screens and didn't give up on a play, got back into plays and forced turnovers, that kind of thing. And then Georgia, you see him stretch his legs a little bit, figure out how dangerous he could be in the open floor. And then he became very, very dangerous in that mid-range area. And it's just like he would step into mid-range jumpers all net. And then he would put the ball on the floor, get to the hole. And then I remember against Texas Tech, he pulled out this move where he drove to like the midline in the lane, ball faked, turnaround jumper, gets good elevation on his shot. That's indefensible.
Yeah.
It's indefensible. And so that was the kind of guy that you were running with. And he became a guy that you couldn't take off the floor because he touched so many areas of the game on both ends.
I 100% agree. His defense, his offense, his mid-range shot-making ability was by far huge. Sixth man, the preseason, I said Vanover. You said Jalen Tate. Midseason, I said Devo, and you said Note. Both of my guys ended up starting for most of the year. Then at the end of the season, I think without a doubt, it is J.D. Note is the sixth man for the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, could you name, I think I can only name about one other guy who came off the bench that I would want more or as much as JD. It was probably Javon Quinterly. But yeah. The coaches in the league liked what JD gave Arkansas more than Quinterly. Quinterly was really talented too, but you know, JD had some stretches where I think in every tournament game he had a stretch where he missed like 4 straight shots. But a couple shots before against Texas Tech, you get down 10 points. He hits 2 threes and no time. You're down 4 and it's a new ball game.
He doesn't have a conscience, I think, is the best way you described it to me. You said that, Scotty. He doesn't have a conscience.
That showed up big time. I think more than anywhere else, it was the Alabama game in Bud Walton when Alabama's kind of making a push toward the end of the first half. JD misses a corner three. He gets offensive rebounded. Ethan Henderson kicks it out to him, and he pulls again like 4 seconds later, and he hits it. And if not for that shot, Arkansas was down at halftime.
The Baylor game, when he just walked it up and shot a three back when he was still in the game, and just nailed one. I think I saw on Twitter that somebody said, get somebody that believes in you like JD Notze believes in himself.
Yeah, and no joke.
I mean, that's so true. He believed in himself. He believed that every shot that he was going to take was going to go in regardless of where he put it up. And he was huge for Arkansas. He was a scorer coming off the bench. And I think that's something that Arkansas needed this year was a scorer to come off the bench. All right. So those are your traditional awards. Now our three non-traditional awards here on the Basketball Podcast in Mid-America. Our first award is the Shooter Award. I said it was JD Notze in the preseason. Scotty said that it would be Moses. Midseason, I went with Notze. Scotty went with Moses. Postseason, I'm going to go with Notze. Are you going to stick with Moses?
For the shooter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Moses. So he shot. So the right corner was his kind of his safe haven. Like I know a lot of people, including I think one of your family members, said, you know, he just stands in the corner a lot, stands in the right corner a lot. Well, he was 19 of 30 there for the year. Pretty good.
Like that's all right.
That's 66% or somewhere around there, 63%. He, you know, I think JD led Arkansas in score. I think he led them in threes from the left wing and the right wing, and I think the top of the key too. So that would, I mean, that kind of bodes well for you picking him.
But I get why Moses is a pick. I also get for why sure. Notte is the pick, but
yeah,
but I think that Moses is a good pick.
Yeah, I mean I want Moses Moody taking a three with the game on the line over JD Notte. So that's kind of what it comes down to for me.
Okay.
And plus Moses was like hyper efficient in one of the best areas of the floor to hit a three. So that kind of pushes him to the top for me.
Valid. I think the reason why I would say that I want Moses taking a shot at the end of the game rather than JD is because of the conscience thing that we just talked about. If you tell JD, hey, you're going to take this shot at the end of the game, JD is going to take that shot.
He's going to take the shot, but it might not be a good one. Moses is probably going to get you a good one.
Moses is either going to take the shot if he's open. He's going to get you a good shot, or he's going to, like some people didn't like this fact about Moses, but he might pass to an open man as well if he gets double teamed or something. And I really appreciated that about Moses. So I agree with you that's something that could be said. Okay, this one was kind of hard for me, Scotty, the go-to. I said in the preseason it would be Moses Moody. You said it would be Vance Jackson.
Man.
Mid-season, I said Moses. You said JD or Moses. Post-season, I'm going to let you go first because honestly, I'm still deciding. I can't figure it out who I want to go to.
I think the go-to in the postseason was either Justin Smith or Jalen Tate. And it's not that, you know, Devo hits the shot to put Arkansas in the Elite Eight, but the ball was in Jalen Tate's hands. And Jalen Tate, in the final 5-1 of that game, made all four of his shots. I think he had three layups on a cut to the rim, a drive, and I think a short mid-range. And then he had another short mid-range. He had all four of his shots, and they all gave Arkansas a lead. Mm. And that was in part because, for whatever reason, Paul Mills left Max Asmus, who is 6 foot nothing on a good day, matched up against a 6'6 Jalen Tate, who's long. It didn't make much sense. But Jalen, I wrote it in his season review that's going to come out sometime, that he wasn't afraid of the big shot. Like against Florida, Arkansas was trying to put Florida away at home. Arkansas's got a 1-point lead with 2.5 minutes left. Jalen gets a high ball screen from Jalen Williams. He gets a mismatch, and then he works himself into a rhythm, into a jumper from about the right elbow. He got to his spot and got to a shot where he was really comfortable. And that's what he did against ORU too.
He hit the big free throws too against Kentucky.
Kentucky, yeah.
So I'm glad that you said that because I was almost trying to talk myself out of picking Jalen Tate, but I think I'm going to go with Jalen Tate because
I think it makes a lot of sense.
He was the guy, you know, I was trying to consider maybe Justin Smith, but he's not Justin Smith got his points off of just unique things. He could get the rebounds. he offensive rebounds and putbacks. He could get push shots and things like that. But when push came to shove at the end of the game, the ball was not going to be in Justin Smith's hands. You might throw the ball up there and see if Justin Smith can come down with an offensive rebound. But Jalen Tate, the ball was in his hands against ORU. The ball was in his hands, as you said, against Florida. The ball was in his hands more often than not. He struggled towards the end of the season with foul trouble at the beginning of games. But if Jalen Tate had the option of being out on the court, I think that he was going to be out on the court. So I think that that's the right pick.
And what does that say about Arkansas's offense that Jalen Tate is your – he might be your go-to guy late in games when you've also got Moses Moody and Devo Davis and Justin Smith and, you know, possibly J.D. Notte or Jalen Williams on the floor too.
An all-time good Arkansas team that I don't think that we will realize how good they were or the potential on this team. I think that Eric Musselman did a really good job of knowing what the ceiling was for this team and pushing them to where they achieved that ceiling.
I think they realized their potential. No doubt about it. I think Eric and his staff squeezed just about everything out of this group that he could have.
I agree. All right, last one, Scotty, and we'll wrap it up here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. Mr. Reliable. Preseason, I said that it would be Desi Sills. You said that it would be Justin Smith. Good pick. Midseason, I went with Desi Sills as well. You went with Moses. And then to end the season, for all the reasons that we just said, I'm going to say Jalen Tate. But we already talked a lot about Jalen Tate and why he was reliable. And, you know, you could always count on that guy. If he played for a majority of the game, he was going to get you double-digit points. But who is your Mr. Reliable?
It was Justin Smith. I mean, the consistency from that guy was remarkable. And, you know, a lot of people in Indiana and some people who even covered Indiana were like bashing him just because he's, you know, he was still a little bit limited as an offensive player, but he was used in the right ways. And he ended up having a career year scoring wise. And he knocked down like a handful of threes and a handful of mid-range jumpers. But he was, like I said earlier, just hyper efficient in the lane. And I think let me pull this up real quick. He led the team in scores in the lane with 145. Jalen Tate was second with 85.
Wow.
He had 130 scores at the rim. And number two was Moses Moody with 64. So he had more than double the scores at the rim of the number two guy on the team, which was, I mean, just
phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, he brought it just about every night. And I still can't get over the progression that he made offensively. I mean, at a certain point in the season, he was just like, he realized, all right, my mid-range jumper's probably not working. I might try it out once or twice a game, but I'm going to stick with this runner and these floaters. And he was an underrated cutter to the rim. And another thing I liked about Devo that led to, you know, a ton of those potential assists and the assists that he did have was that he won the race to the elbow, won the race to the free throw line. He attracted a bunch of defenders, and Justin Smith cut behind him for dunks and layups and whatever else. And he underrated cutter that led to a lot of his scores, just like those cuts to the rim and, you know, the drop-off passes from guys, especially from the guards.
Scott, that's a ton of information.
Hopefully it's not overwhelming.
It was not.
Like
it was,
Baylor's defense.
It was good, as always. Baylor could swarm to the ball. I think that we saw that in the national championship game as well against a really good Gonzaga team. What's not overwhelming is if you go to wholehogsports.com, it's just the right amount of information. I don't know if that transition worked or not, but we're going to go with it. It's just the right amount of information, wholehogsports.com. You can check out Scotty's season in reviews. We also have stories up about DC Tony and like as well. So we'll have stories of if you want to check out more information about those guys, those players, check out wholehogsports.com. The Basketball Podcast of Mid-America will not be as regular as it was throughout the season. We're not going to post one of these every week anymore. Basketball season has winded down, but we might come back with one or two here in the postseason to keep you updated. I think we want to do one once rosters are finished and kind of look do a preseason, a way too early look at Arkansas in 2021-22.
Yeah, it's when the roster becomes a little bit more settled, but right now there's just guys.
Yeah, there's
just dudes that can play and get, and guys that you should be excited about. And I know, like, this is, you know, the spring and the summer is when kind of the hype train starts. I know that's especially true for spring football. It's kind of why I hate it so much, just because you get told that one player's making this progress and then he doesn't really see the field in the fall. But like basketball, I don't think really works that way.
Yeah,
like they're bringing these guys in for a reason, and you know, the transfers don't always work out. Like there's been a guy both years that Eric Musselman's been here, one of the transfers hasn't really panned out like they had thought, like with Gene Tosella and then with Vance Jackson. But Vance Jackson in certain games played really well.
Yeah.
And Vance shot 50% from three on the right wing for the season on like 20 attempts. And so it's not like he did it just against, you know, Mississippi Valley State. Like he had Arkansas in games at Tennessee and had a couple other pretty good scoring games, and he was, you know, he was a great teammate down the stretch of the season. Yeah. Wasn't seeing the floor, you know, probably like he thought he should have, but I don't know. I like the guys that they're bringing in, and I think there's a place for them to make an impact immediately.
Immediately, indeed. Well, if you're listening to us on the podcast, make sure to subscribe, like us there, rate us, give us 5 stars. It helps people find the podcast, the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. If you're watching on YouTube, first of all, check out these amazing shirts that Gary Thomas has given us. If you're listening on the podcast, you can check us out on YouTube. Just search Whole Hog Sports. The YouTube page will pop up. You can check out these amazing shirts that we are. We're going to give away to the winner of the BPMA basketball tournament challenge. So make sure to check that out as well. We really appreciate all of y'all listening all season long. It has been a blast. Adding the video element, I feel like, has added another portion of Basketball Podcast in America listeners. And we appreciate the feedback that y'all post on YouTube or wherever you post it. We really do appreciate that. And we appreciate you listening. It would just be us talking to each other for an hour, Scotty, if y'all didn't listen and give your feedback. So we really appreciate that. There's big things to come, as always, at WholeHogSports.com. So just keep watching there and here, wherever you're listening. Well,
there's one other thing. Like, if y'all see these t-shirts and you're like interested in it, hit one of us up with like your shirt size and your address, like, so we can ship it to you, and then we'll talk about transfer of the funds later. Like, I've got Venmo, Cash App, that kind of thing, so we can make it happen.
We got McDonald's bags. Oh, it's we're not.
Yeah, I mean that could work too.
We can deal in whatever we need. So yeah, if y'all are interested in the shirts, just let us know. Reach out to Scotty at.
They were fairly cheap too. Like, I think I put like $20.
Not bad. At NWA Scotty for
a shirt that'll last a while.
At Seth Gamble 5 for me. Yeah. If you're interested, check us out. You can shoot us. I think the DMs are open for Scotty and I, or at least you can reach out via some kind of messaging platform or Twitter. So we'll be there at NW Scotty, at Seth Campbell Tyler. As I said, we really appreciate y'all listening all season long. Man, oh man, we are ready for next season as well. Well, for the last time, sort of, for right now, for Scotty Borderline, I am Seth Campbell saying so long, and we will see you back here next year.